God is in the details of your life. And I don't think that he always controls the details. I think most of the time he kind of lets things go how they are, but he's there for you. She wrote a note for me that I still have up in my locker. She wrote it for me in my first fall camp. You know, and she just said, like, destiny belongs to the underdog. Regardless of what happens, we'll be in your corner kind of thing. And that just, like, as a husband, that just gives you the freedom. It's like, okay, if I, quote, fail, I don't really fail.
Welcome to another episode of Brothers in the Foyer. I'm your host, Andrew. I'm here with my brothers, Isaiah, Will, Crispin, and Maurice. Thank you so much, guys, for being here. And today we're joined with Britton Covey, Super Bowl champion and dynamic return specialist for the Philadelphia Eagles as part of our Fourth Down and Faith series. Known for his quickness and playmaking ability, Britton has made a name for himself in the league, proving that determination and grit can overcome any odds. But beyond the game, Britton is also a man of faith, a devoted husband, and someone who strives to keep the spiritual foundation strong, even with the intense demands of the NFL. In this episode, we're going to talk about his journey to becoming a Super Bowl champion, the pivotal moments that tested his faith, and how he balances football, family, and his relationship with God, especially when life feels like it's forced and long. Get ready to be inspired by this conversation about perseverance, purpose, and keeping the faith. Britton, thank you for being here, man.
Yeah, love it. Happy to be here. It's great. Sure. Appreciate it.
So, man, like, how did this happen? How are you sitting here? Because it started on IG, I believe, and then you're here now.
Where I found you, was on IG. My algorithm, whoever's controlling my algorithm, did a good job. So
appreciate you.
So I just saw some stuff and I've liked your guys' stuff for a while now. So really, it's just Instagram. Where I saw you.
Wow. Nice.
Sir, that's cool. We're reaching people.
We're reaching people.
Somebody.
Right, we made it outside of Utah. That's cool.
Absolutely.
So, man, like, obviously we've known you. You have a pretty household name in Utah, obviously, and then within football as well, college football. Can you just give us a little backstory, a little bit about, for our viewers who may not know you, just kind of like where you started, where you played at, and what you're doing currently right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, started here in Utah. Just went to Timpview High School just down the road.
Nice.
And grew up right next to BYU, but chose to go to Utah. Had to borrow a shirt from a neighbor when I committed because I didn't have any Utah.
There you go.
Chose to go to Utah. Loved it. Obviously, I switched from quarterback to receiver because I'm pretty short.
Well, you play a QB in high school?
I did play QB.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. Rollouts all day long. I couldn't see over anybody. Basically. I switched from QB to receiver in high school or in college. And then just loved my time up at the U. Some great coaches up there. Coach Scally, Witt, Coach Shaw. You know, they've kind of just been a staple. Utah is an interesting, it's so different from the rest of college football in that it's kept a lot of the same faces. And I think that's why the program's done really well for the last little while. chose to go on a mission after my freshman year, went down to Chile. And I remember that conversation. I was mostly supported, but a lot of people were pretty mad about, you know, going on a mission.
Who gave you the biggest?
Witt was totally supportive. You know?
Really?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Witt was all about it, and most of the coaches, but there were quite a few teammates and stuff that were confused by it.
Oh God. Okay.
But you know, I get it. Sometimes, even when an athlete chooses to go now, I'm like, I gotta wait a couple of years before I see him play. So I get it. But I loved it. Loved my mission. Best thing ever for me. And I came back. Played a few years. COVID was crazy. You know, that was a crazy year. I thought I might try for the draft right after COVID, but I was like, I got to come back for one more year. So I came back for one more year, won a Pac-12 championship, went to the Rose Bowl. Yeah. And then, chose to test my luck in the draft and wasn't drafted. And that was pretty, you know, that was tough.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of got it. Older guy. Undersized, balding white guy, like, you know, sneaky athletic is what they had on my draft profile.
Sneaky athletic, okay.
fast, Hunter Renfro comparison.
There you go. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I figured the writing was on the wall with that a little bit. Yeah. But I knew that if someone got me in a camp, that I could surprise someone. Mm-hmm. So Brian Johnson was in Philly, great Utah legend. And so he's the one that called me and was like, you know, we really want you. And so I chose to go to Philly. And, you know, I knew within the first week or so that I'd have a chance of making it just because, you know, you learn at my size, especially you learn what makes you special and what coaches are looking for. They're not looking for you to be the biggest blocking guy on the team or whatever. Yeah, you just got to be unique. And so, then I have been so fortunate because this doesn't happen often to be in one spot for your first while in the league, you know, three years in the league. We've had two Super Bowl appearances and one victory, which has been great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Philly. I've loved it. It's been great. Love my teammates. They're the best part of it all. I was actually telling you before, I sent a few of my teammates one of your episodes because they were like, I've always invited them to go to church and they're like, man, what if I go in and there's no black guys? I'm like, I'm telling you, there's black guys.
Bro, we're here, bro. There's nobody.
So keep them going because I'm going to send them out.
Yes, please.
For years to come.
Well, yeah, we're going to turn this into a real and you got to
sit. Oh, absolutely. Yes. I'm sending this one to all of them. Please, go to church.
Yeah.
So, come but on, I love man. It. It's been great.
That's awesome, man. So that's like, you pretty much live the dream. I mean, not you are living the dream, I would say, especially for someone who's played football all their life. They're at, like, you reached the pinnacle.
Yeah.
You know, in a sense.
No, it is true. I mean, I feel like if you talk to any guy over the age of 30 or 40, there's always that, like, if I would have just done this, maybe I could have made it. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. It's funny how when you're in the moment of living the dream, you're still so stressed out and there's so much going on and you have to remind yourself of that. Yeah. You know, the NFL is not everything that it seems, especially for someone like me who's just fighting and clawing to make a roster every year.
Yeah.
It's a lot crazier than I think most people would know, especially with a family and living in two places during the year and things like that, having to be ready to uproot yourself at any moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've been cut multiple times on the practice squad, signed back up. So it's a, you know, we've been really fortunate and blessed. It's just a lot more chaotic than I think people see from the outside.
For sure. Yeah. What's that like? Like the whole practice squad getting elevated to be on the team. Like what's like, I'm just curious about that process.
Yeah. I've learned about it since being in there. There's so many things you wouldn't know if you just look at it from afar. But basically, you know, first couple of years, finally I was, you know, I've been on the active roster every game throughout my career, but I've been what's called a practice squad elevation for a few games where I am on the practice squad and then they elevate me and you can only do that so many times before you have to sign someone.
Gotcha.
But my first ever game, I actually went viral my first ever game, but not for the right reasons.
Because
my first ever game, I was on practice squad and I was elevated to the active roster. So I didn't have an active roster pass. So they didn't know who I was at the parking gate to get into the players lot. And I here I am, this small, scrawny kid. I don't know, you know.
high school kid.
And they were like, yeah, we don't know who you are. I'm like, oh, I know. I'm activated. I'm going to be the return man for this game. Like, yeah, you're not on our roster. And so they made me park with the tailgater. So I had to park about a half mile away. Paid $40.
Bro, you had to pay $40 to go to your first
game. Still haven't been reimbursed for it either.
Bro. Hey, this man.
Crazy.
Paid $40.
That's wild.
Park with the tailgaters. Some people recognized me too. They were like, are you Covey? So yeah. I don't know how to get to the stadium.
That's wild.
Are you feeling me?
Yeah, it's a good
egg,
man.
Oh my gosh. So you finally get to a point to where ink goes to paper. I'm officially on the team. What was your like welcome to the NFL moment once you were elevating? Like, I have signed, at least for this season, I am on the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, what was that welcome into the NFL moment after that point?
Yeah. I think everyone has their welcome to the NFL moments, right? It's some for good, some for bad. I mean, obviously you got the, I had to get Chick-fil-A. I spent thousands of dollars at Chick-fil-A because every game I had to pick up the whole receiver room Chick-fil-A. And then that started extending into coaches and stuff. So that, that wasn't fun. My Chick-fil-A rewards points were out the roof though. I'll never forget the first, because here's the thing about being a return specialist in the NFL is you don't ever practice with a full unit return specialist because there's just so much, only so much you can do, and your bodies are so such precious commodities up at that level that the first time you do a return is in a game that you put it all together. You don't do it in practice. Gotcha. You know, you do full, and full unit. You, obviously, you do offense, defense, but special teams at the next level is kind of you.
It's like
you know what to do, and then you throw it together. I'll never forget the first. I think it was one of my first couple games. My second game against the Vikings, and caught a ball, made a move that I right when I made it, I'm like, oh, I'm gone. Right, I'm gone. And I got tackled by six players within about 2 seconds. And I remember watching the film because with that move in college, I get around the edge, right? And I remember watching the film. I make that move. I make the first guy miss. And I looks like I have daylight. And eight guys on the film immediately. Just and just realizing the difference in speed at that level is so, so drastic. You've got guys that are your size running 4.4s, right? It's show him, please. But it's pretty crazy, and so you learn, you know, when to pick and choose your time to take risks, how you need to get vertical. You know, you can't be dancing around. And so the thing is, people watch Devin Hester highlights, right? And they assume that, but that's Devin Hester. That's a one in a million, right? A billion, I don't know. So
the human joystick.
Exactly. So you got someone like me and 99% of returners, you pick and choose your times to dance around. And most of the time you got to be smart, get vertical. So that was my welcome to the NFL moment in the game. And I also remember my rookie year. This was, he probably doesn't even remember this. I'll have to text him. But one of my first lifts with the team, I was over doing this leg press extension machine we have over there. And I was doing like 80, 90% of my max weight of both legs. And it was tough. And then Jalen Hurts comes in, sits over, and he does it with one leg. He just looks at me, he just laughs. My quarterback. Shout out to Jay.
That guy's strong.
Swole.
Yeah, you see that video of him doing like 600 pound squats and
like repping it out.
Yeah.
Like
him and Saquon will have battles of and they won't even max out, and they'll be doing, you could put like three of me on the bar and they'll be doing it. It's crazy.
That's nuts.
Saquon. Talk about the training, you know, the intense training that goes into becoming a professional athlete. And like, what does that look like? You probably train with the team. Do you train outside of practice too?
Yeah, no, I do. Honestly, once you get to the next level, what you realize is everybody has to be special in some area. Very few jack of all trades players in the NFL. And it actually kind of takes the pressure off to try and be that, right? And so and people always ask me, what advice do I have, you know, for players playing football, trying to make it to college or the NFL or whatever it is. They're usually undersized players. You know, their dad's like, oh, he idolizes you. And I'm like, oh, my fellow short king. That's hot. I love nothing more than when I have kids who are undersized come up to me because, that was me. I looked up to Darren Sproles, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, all those guys. Yeah. So I love it. And so what I always tell people is, you know, build on your strengths. Right. And it's a quote from my grandpa, build on your strengths and organize to make weaknesses irrelevant. Everybody wants to focus so much on where you're weak and try and build those so that you're up to par. I think it's so overrated. No one's expecting me to go block a linebacker. You know, maybe once or twice a game to break a tendency, but build on your strengths. Don't spend so much time trying to make your weakness up to par with everyone else. Take your strength and double it, right? Make yourself unique. You know, and that's what sets you apart. So for me, that was that was what got me time in college and in the league. And, you know, I lift for injury prevention, but I don't lift to go block a linebacker. Instead, I focus on quick route running, you know, agility movements, things that make me unique.
Yeah.
Never dropping a punt, things like that. Just things that will make me unique and set me apart rather than try and bring everything else up to par, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So
I love that point of view, because it's usually work on your
yeah.
Your shortcomings. Get those, you know, like you said, up to par so that you can be average. But it's like, if you want to be great, work on.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, you know, specifically in sports, but I mean, even in life, I always tell people of, you know, you are you for a reason. You're unique. Like, build on that. Like, if you were to spend 5 hours training your strength and 5 hours training your weakness, the difference in how much you actually gain when you work on your strength is so much more great than when you work on your weakness, right? It's just not the same level of incremental gains when you work on what you're actually good at. So
absolutely.
That's a good point.
My gosh. So what was the Super Bowl experience like? Because even in your short career, you've experienced both.
Yeah.
You've gotten there and like, oh my gosh, this is going to happen. I can't believe it. I'm just new in the league and I'm already like here. We could do it. And then it doesn't happen.
Yep.
Sorry about that.
I wasn't. I'm a Cowboys fan. So I was really happy Pat Mahomes and them.
Big rep.
But only for that. Only for that though. So you were able to experience that. And then you guys got it. And it was such an amazing thing to watch, to be quite honest with you. Outside of the jokes of, you know, the Philly Dallas like rival, I had you guys picked.
Yeah.
I thought you guys were going to do it. So, you know, I'll take that one as well. But so what was that Super Bowl experience like? Yeah. You go through it the first time, and I'm sure that was an amazing ordeal, just being in the Super Bowl for the very first time, but then you guys lose and then you come back and you win.
Yeah.
What was that roller coaster like for you and your team?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I have an unrealistic view of, you know, getting to Super Bowls because I've played in the league 3 years and been to two, which is amazing. You know, my rookie year, getting to play in it. And it was, you know, we were up 10 at halftime.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a big punt return right before halftime. And I was like, this is the pinnacle, right? Yeah. I was like, we're doing it. And then Patrick Mahomes happened, you know, and Patrick, he's an unbelievable player. He's... After watching, you know, being live in person with so many different players, he really is as good as they say. He's just, he's amazing. And so that was crushing, you know, and I think Jalen had a quote after this Super Bowl where he said, the joy of winning this Super Bowl doesn't compare to the pain of losing the first one. The pain of losing the first one was just, oh man, it just ate at you for it still does, you know, even though you've kind of accomplished it now. So that was tough. And it's kind of the way we lost and things like that. And what's also hard about the NFL is when you're on a great team, Super Bowl team or a team that reaches the NFC Championship, whatever, you got 6-7 guys on contract years that get poached from other teams. So we had both our offensive and defensive coordinator poached after that year.
That's true. Yeah.
We had our best linebacker, our best defensive players, our safety, right? All poached, running back, all these different players. And so once you go into the next season, you're like, yeah, we're good, but it takes a lot to get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, you got to capitalize when you're there because you don't know if it's going to happen again, you know, unless you're Tom Brady. I don't know how he did it. So that next year, you know, we kind of fell apart near the end of the season. And I don't know, it was that following summer where we kind of made a goal as a team. And it felt like college this last year. Like I've never, you know, in my 3 years, and talking with other guys who have been on other teams, it was a different brotherhood on this Eagles team than anywhere else in the league, you know. Wow. And I haven't been anywhere else, so I can't say, but I'm just speaking from talking to my teammates who have been on other teams, that it was different. It felt like college, right? It was just banded together. We got some great leaders, you know, getting Saquon in there was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Saquon's such a great leader. He keeps everybody level. I think about 3/4 away through this year, we kind of knew we were going to do it. There was a different feeling. We were so good. Our defense this year was we didn't have to send a blitz ever.
We
had like eight guys up front. You could rotate four and four, and we never sent any blitz, and they were just bad.
Yeah,
as a former defensive lineman, man, that
is
that front was crazy.
Crazy.
Never seen anything like it.
That was grown.
So really fun to be a part of, you know. And obviously, I got injured week 13 against the Ravens. I forget who tackled me. I need to go look him up. But I was close to coming back near the end, but it just wasn't worth it, according to the doctors. So I didn't get a play in it, but it was still a blast, right?
Yeah.
But still knowing that you were a part of that to make that, to get to that place, you know, you could still always say, I contributed to to getting us to this place.
Totally. And it was fun in the locker room celebration. Everybody's got their champagne and everybody was handing me water bottles. And
what's up?
It was
tough. You need goggles for that.
Oh, I had to. It was tough this year because of that. I mean, you know, I always have started as a return specialist, but it takes so long to crack a receiver rotation, you know?
It's deep.
And I always tell people, you know, I got no shame in saying I'm Devontae Smith's backup. Like, you want to shame me for saying I'm Devontae Smith's backup? Okay, I don't care. That's Devontae Smith, right? Yeah. One of the best players I've ever seen. I mean, just so good, so fluid, works so hard, and such a good person. Took me 3 years to crack the receiver rotation, you know? And you gotta perform every day, and it was tough because the first two games I started, you know, this year, game two and three, Atlanta, and then the Saints, and then I catch a little screen pass from Jalen. I try and run someone over. I've never done that in my life. I haven't done that since middle school. Try and run someone over and just
your strengths.
Oh, know your strength. Run out of bounds. Anyways, try and run someone over, and you know. Break my shoulder, so you know your strengths, kids.
It's the phrase of the day.
But that was tough, you know, because you work so hard to crack that rotation, and but it all happens for a reason. I saw many blessings come out of it, and I really believe that. So
that's awesome, man. Speaking of blessings, faith has been a big part of your journey. It seems like you and your faith, and we had Chad Lewis on, and we asked him a similar question that I'm going to pose to you. Taking a step back, you decided to go and serve a mission in between your collegiate career and then moving forward. How was that decision for you? Like, because a lot of people, when they know they have aspirations to make it to those big leagues, they'll put off if they're, you know, being part of the faith, serving a mission, and just pursue their sports career. So why was that different for you in terms of making that decision to go serve a mission and then come back and pursue your professional career?
Yeah. That's a good question. I believe that I was really fortunate with the support system I had around me. Not everybody has that. I had my mind pretty much made up from the time I was young, which I think there's a lesson in that in and of itself, right? That regardless of what happened, I was going to serve a mission, right? And so that wasn't too hard of a decision for me. But I think the reasons why I chose to serve a mission, it all goes back to that scripture, right? In the Bible, Book of Mormon, wherever it's found, of just seek first the kingdom of God and then all things shall be added unto you. I always believe, I really believe that. My grandpa used to teach a principle of primary greatness versus secondary greatness. And he used to say that your private victory always precedes your public victory. And I think that's the biggest kind of principle I try and hope to live by in my life, is this idea of there's primary greatness before there's secondary greatness. There's private victories before there's public victories. And I think in the culture of the world, especially with my generation, Gen Z, there's such a chase for money and fame and popularity that you really miss the point, and it doesn't bring happiness, doesn't bring peace. And there's this idea of your private self, who you are when no one's looking, that brings the peace, that brings the joy. That's what real success is like.
Right.
Yeah. And I truly believe that you will be happier in your life and better at leading your family if you focus on who you are in private and your private habits, your private victories, and then that leads to the public ones, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And there's, you know, I've known many people, especially being around famous people that are publicly successful, but privately sad. Yeah. And it's not worth it. And so I don't know. My grandpa, I talk about my grandpa a lot, obviously, because he had such an impact on me, such an influence.
I'd say even on the world. I mean,
on the world. Yeah. My teammates read his book. You right. know, when I went down to Chile, people would see my name tag and recognize the name Covey from his book. He had such an impact on me, but he was such a good person. And he was all about, he was this famous author, but he was all about the private victory, who you are on the inside when no one's looking, your integrity. And so I really believe that, and that's where the happiness comes from. So that's what I strive for. I'm not always perfect, but that's a big reason why I went on a mission is, this is, you know, who I want to be at all times, not just, you know, the success I want to have publicly. And I think that stuff comes later, you know?
Yeah. That's so awesome. That's great wisdom. They actually, you mentioned integrity. They say that's the greatest measure of integrity is what you do when no one is watching.
Yeah.
Actually. So that's great. Great.
No, I love that.
Thanks.
I love the idea that integrity means that your word is your bond, right? And that if I say something to you, you can be 100% certain that I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I always think that Jesus Christ is the perfect example of integrity because he had such integrity that we could trust in his word before coming down to earth that he was going to perform the atonement, right? And we had such faith and trust in his word before it had even happened that we all took the risk to come to earth knowing that he was going to go and fulfill his word and do the most important thing and fulfill the atonement. And that is the perfect example of integrity to me too. It's who you are when no one's looking, and is your word your bond? You know, can I trust everything that comes out of your mouth? So,
That's so awesome. I've never thought about, like, obviously Jesus Christ encompasses everything that's good about anybody, right? But I've never, like, put integrity with Jesus Christ. I don't know why, but it's such an interesting thought because you're right. Like, we were able to trust in his integrity that he would do what he said he would do before he was even here. I'm taking notes, man.
Straight up. Absolutely.
I think there's examples of this all over the scriptures of why you can trust, you know, whether the quote, whether it's by the voice of me or the voice of my servants, it is the same. It will all be fulfilled is what was said. Yeah. There's a scripture where Lehi says, I have obtained a land of promise. And he's saying this while he's still in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
But he's saying it as if it's a past tense thing. He's obtained it already because God promised it to him and God has perfect integrity and so he can trust it. And so he says, I've literally already obtained this. Even though I'm not physically there, I can trust in God's word so much that I can rejoice in this promise. Mm-hmm. You know, Abraham is the same way. And so that's the type of person that I think we all should try to be.
Yeah,
you know?
Most definitely.
So you know, Fourth in Faith is the episode, and we're talking about the accolades or accomplishments or just your experiences with football because that's the stuff that we don't ever really get to to live. You know what I mean? So you're in the NFL, you're 3 years in, been with the Philadelphia Eagles, you've had new teammates, you've had teammates come and go, so you've had your experiences getting to know them. How has your faith affected how you go about your daily life, especially, you know, in football, in the locker room, and things like that? How has your faith affected how you go about, you know, being a Philadelphia Eagle?
Yeah. I feel very fortunate that I'm surrounded by a lot of men of faith. I think that faith and football really do go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cliche, but it really does. I'll tell you, the faith of a lot of my teammates is pretty remarkable. You know, we have group messages where we'll send scriptures to each other and we talk about it all the time. One of my good buddies, Paris Campbell, you know, he's got a podcast, you know, where he talks about that. And AJ is such a faithful person and Smitty and all these guys, really, I'm just naming the receivers because I'm closest with them. I love, you know, my receivers, that's a real brotherhood there. Like AJ and Smitty, I've been with them for 3 years and they're like older brothers to me. I don't actually know who's older. I might be older than Smitty by a year or something, but I feel like the younger brother there. But I just, you know, shout out to them. I appreciate them so much. They've been like brothers to me. So being around people like that makes it easier. You know, I'm around a lot of people of faith, which is really great. And then, I don't know, I've always felt like there's this idea of be a light, not a judge, be a model, not a critic. And I think that's what I try to be wherever I'm at, you know, and show God through how I live and uphold standards that I've been taught. Mm-hmm. And what I've always realized when it comes to my specific faith, right, Mormonism, you know, being a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is the more true I am to it and the more unashamed I am of it, mm-hmm. the more people respect you for it. I see all the time, especially saw this in college, you know, when there were a lot more members on my team.
Yeah.
When people would come up and either crack a joke about it or ask you, like, how Mormon are you? Was these things.
Yeah.
And it's not that people are really embarrassed, but they kind of shy away from the questions and things like this, or, you know, they make things not a big deal. I've realized that you lose the respect of other people. When I am asked questions, you know, one of the favorite pastimes of my teammates is to sit me down at lunch and just bombard me with questions, right?
Gosh, okay.
The church. And I always answer them 100% with love for my religion, and I don't shy away from questions and from how much I love the church, from how passionate I am about it. And you'd be surprised at how much people respect you for it.
Yeah.
People that might initially make jokes or have, you know, certain misconceptions, the more unashamed you are of what you believe, the more that opens up people's hearts to it.
Yeah.
And the more they respect you for it. So it's a paradox. It's actually, the more you try to walk on eggshells and not offend people or talk about certain things, the less people respect you for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I have seen it. And so I love doing it.
Firm foundation. You stand on what you know, standing on your business of what you believe in. I mean, people's like, yeah, he doesn't waver, you know.
Totally.
He sees that consistency, and that's where I think respect comes in a lot as well.
I do too, and I think that's where, you know, people, and I think this is about missionaries, this is what I tell missionaries all the time is, yeah, your job is to go knock on 100 doors knowing that 99 of them are going to say that they don't need you, but of those 99, at some point in the next 10 years, something's going to happen in their life where they're going to turn into the one. Right. Something's going to happen. Someone's going to pass away in their family. They're going to lose their job. Something's going to happen where they remember that consistency that you were talking about. And they say, I need that.
Right.
Right. And I think that's kind of the whole point of all this is, you know, God doesn't necessarily promise us happiness. He does, but he promises us peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's different. That's a consistency. Right. Yeah.
Right.
That's this, no matter what's happening in your life, the circumstances, there's a consistency there. And so the more consistent you are, people in a certain moment might not need that consistency, and they might make fun of you, or they might, you know, ask questions. But then when they're in a moment when they're like this, they're going to remember, like, I remember Covey always being like this, and I need that. And that's when their heart's opened,
yeah.
You know, so you don't get discouraged about the 99 people that just mock you, laugh about it, because they're not in that moment yet.
Right.
So you stay with Christ, and that's what I, you know, that's how you learn to not get discouraged from people who might think differently than you. So
that's excellent awesome. Perspective.
Yeah.
Where people just don't think that way.
Yeah.
Know? Wow.
So you're 3 years in, with the Philadelphia Eagles, and your road getting there has not been the one, like, we'll just compare you, I guess, to the other receivers in your room. Like AJ Brown and Devontae Smith's trip to the NFL was slightly different. Their journey getting there was different, right? So from the outside looking in, someone would say, well, someone like Covey's really got to make sure they're doing the extra stuff. They got to make sure they're the first one in, last one out. They got to do all the other little things. They got to make sure they're always in the right place at the right time. They got to do everything right, because they're fighting for their job every day that they're there, right? That's from the outside looking in, that would be the opinion.
Right.
So right or wrong, how has it been for you in your journey to not only maybe feel the pressure of trying to realize your dream and do what you want to do and provide this lifestyle for your family or for yourself, how do you find the time to still prioritize and maintain a balance between that and spending time with your family?
Oh man, yeah, I'll tell you, it's not easy. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, the NFL in general isn't easy, especially when you're in my position, fighting to make a roster. You don't know if you're going to have to move at any point. I've had teammates that moved to 3 cities in 4 weeks from San Francisco to Atlanta to, you know, Denver, all in a matter of 4 weeks, you know, but that's just the life. And so you prepare yourself for that. And all the other thing is, Philly is not an easy place to play in. It's we're pretty brutal. I've had taxi drivers tell me that I suck, you know, and not just them, but many people. Wow. And I learned a lot about myself, about my relationship with my wife, with God, all these things in my first year, more than anything, because first few games in the league, I struggled, you know, and I was pretty disliked from the fan base for the first couple of games. And that's, you know, somewhat normal, I think, but it doesn't feel normal in the time.
Yeah. Right.
And there's so much pressure on every snap, every play in practice, every question asked in a team meeting. There's just so much pressure that it can bombard you. And I got to give a credit to my wife. I shared my burden my whole entire time. It was never something that I had to bear alone. And so I'm really grateful for her. She bore that just as much as I did in my first year, just that, you know, that pressure that we felt all the time, and almost suffocating just anxiety of whether things were going to go right or not.
Yeah.
And I think that you get to a point where you're okay with whatever happens. And
okay,
I think for me with, you know, when it comes to how do you balance everything with faith and your family, I just think like I'm the one living my life and no one else is living this for me. So people can feel bad for me and say they're sorry, but they don't have to feel what I feel on a daily basis. I don't want to feel this every day. Sadness every day. So what do I got to do to not feel that? We got to spend time with my wife, got to spend time with my kid. I got to not worry about this and that because I don't want to feel this every day. And maybe that's a privileged way of looking at it, but just love my wife. Got to say, she really helped me through that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
I completely agree. When life is heavy and you got a lot of crap on your shoulders, having your spouse to be there for you,
it's huge. Yeah.
Lift all the burden, man. It can make things a lot lighter.
And her willingness to say to me, like, preemptively, we'll be okay regardless of what happens. That gives you the permission to any spouse out there. When you get to that point with your person and you say, like, we're going to go for this and we're going to be okay if it doesn't turn out. You know, someone says that to you, that gives you so much. It gives you the freedom, the permission to go after something.
Go do it,
You know, She wrote a note for me that I still have up in my locker. She wrote it for me in my first fall camp, you know, and she just said, like, destiny belongs to the underdog, regardless of what happens, we'll be in your corner kind of thing. And that just, like, as a husband, that just gives you the freedom. It's like, okay, if I, quote, fail, I don't really fail, you know, it's okay. And so, I don't know. Relationship advice, I guess.
Absolutely.
Words of a woman can literally make you or break you.
Or break you. Oh my God. Absolutely.
But yeah, that's
quickly.
Awesome. Shout out to wifey for that.
Shout out. That's absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, man. For everything that you've accomplished on the field, in your locker room, what are some of the things that you find yourself, whether it be in positions of service or just with you and your family, that you enjoy outside of the football field?
Well, I love to golf. I love golfing, and that's the most typical thing I could say, I guess. I do. I love to golf. Trying to train my son to golf so he doesn't have to, you know, put himself at risk for CTE like me. But I throw a charity golf tournament every year called the Covey Classic. Nice. You guys want to play in it? Have a group.
Hey, I'm down for that.
I'm horrible, but hey,
I'll be doing it for
but I'll be
Top Golf last night.
There you go.
I got a gift card.
Yeah, still. Yeah, we do it for a charity, a local charity that's near and dear to my family's heart called Bridal Up Hope. Okay. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. Sounds familiar. My cousin, about 15 years ago, no, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, she died from the effects of depression and anxiety. And so they, out of that darkness, they created something beautiful. And they created this charity called Bridal Up Hope, where they help young girls struggling with mental health or just needing something in their life. And it teaches them the 7 habits through equestrian training with horses.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Really cool. Wow. So I've really enjoyed attaching my name to that. I'm an ambassador for them. And that's kind of the charitable work that I like to do with them. But outside of that, yes, I love to golf. I like to fish. And something people usually don't know about me is I love like musicals, Broadway. Love Broadway. Yeah, yeah. That's what my wife and I listen to in the car.
Would you have been in theater if you
I would have if I could sing. I can't sing. I know all the words, but I can't sing. So
that's awesome. Okay.
But yeah, that's kind of me. And then I just love sports. I love watching all sports. You know what I mean? A big NBA guy.
Did you fill the bracket out?
Did fill the bracket out. Had Florida winning.
Okay.
So we'll see. I don't know when this episode will air, but hopefully I'm right.
Probably after.
Yeah. Right. Fill the bracket out. Definitely. It's funny though. People always ask me, did I dream of the NFL growing up? Not at all. We live in Utah. There's no NFL team here. I dreamed of playing college football. That was my. And funny enough, I have dog tags that I had made when I was like 8 years old, and it says future star quarterback for BYU. I made it because at the time John Beck was like my John Beck, Austin Colley. I grew up a big BYU fan. Todd Watkins.
Okay.
And Todd Watkins was the man. Shout out to Todd Watkins. So I grew up not the biggest Utah fan, but I just grew up wanting to play college football. That was my dream. Didn't hardly watch an NFL game till I got into college. It was all college football. So wow. You know, anything after that was gravy.
Yeah.
That's what's up. Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
So you're talking about, you know, all these guys you looked up to and being in Utah without having a professional football team, that's your pinnacle of dream. So you've got all these guys that you remember from the collegiate ranks and things that just had an amazing impact on you. You've gone through college now. You're now in the NFL and you're 3 years in. And I don't know, some might say because of the average lifespan of an NFL player that you're now a vet. What was the mentoring experience like as far as you being mentored, and have you had any opportunities to mentor a younger kid than you coming in?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I first got to Utah, I feel like I was mentored by multiple people, and Kenneth Scott, if you guys remember, Case Scotty, Jamison Field, some of those receivers. I feel like I was mentored even by Coach Scally, because he always encouraged me to go on a mission too. Had some great mentors in college. And then the NFL, you know, I even felt more on my own because, you know, you're not in the state and it's just a whole different ballgame. And I would say the main mentors I had, obviously AJ and Smitty were great. Brandon Graham is one of, if not my favorite teammate I've ever had in my life. And he just retired. Most starts in Eagles history.
Yeah.
Wow. Hall of Fame player for sure.
That was a heartfelt retirement.
Yeah. I mean, he tore his triceps this year and came back in the Super Bowl with a torn tricep plate and re-tore it. Like, he's just, BG is one of the best people you'll ever meet. And it's funny because in the NFL, and this is such a unique thing, another welcome to the NFL moment is just how cutthroat it is.
Yeah.
You'll arrive without any notice or anything, and the two lockers next to you will be cleared out. And you'll be like, oh, where's Jimmy? You know, and be like, oh, yeah, he's He got cut. He's picked up by the Seahawks in the last 5 hours. But this happens every day, right? You come and someone is gone. Mm-hmm. And it could be you. Everyone looks like the Grim Reaper. You're walking around. Right?
Yeah.
And so because of that, there's a culture in the NFL that's built a little bit where you can kind of recognize when guys are brought in for the purpose of not sticking around. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? They're brought in to be a practice squad body or because someone's injured for a week, so they need another body, and then mm-hmm. they'll be gone. And because of that, I would say a good portion of players don't really make the effort with those players. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's just not where, I mean, I've had so many best friends who were cut, traded,
yeah.
left after a year. I mean, one of my best friends in the whole world, Alameda Zacchaeus, he's been on 2 teams in the last 2 years. So it's tough. And because of that, players don't make that effort a lot of times.
Yeah.
And okay. I was an undrafted free agent rookie, undersized slot receiver. I guarantee you the vast majority of players didn't think I would make it just up front. And yeah, so, just
looking at you like,
you know what I mean? They're looking at
me. Yeah.
Exactly.
type thing. Like.
But I'll tell you, one of the first people who came up to me was BG. Mm. And here's at the time, 13-year, 12-year vet, already a Hall of Famer pretty much. And he comes up to me and he just, hey, how's it going? And he talks like that. And he just talks with me, gets my phone number, asked me to show him my highlight film. Like he just, you know, made such an effort and took me under his wing. And I realized later on, oh, he takes everybody under his wing. That's just who he is.
Yeah.
So he inspires me a lot. I always talk about people I look up to. And for me, BG is one of those people that I strive to be like because he has energy for everyone. Mm-hmm. After a game, he'll have people talk to him for hours. And I know he's exhausted, but he gives the same amount of energy to everybody.
That's awesome.
And so he took me under his wing for sure. Jordan Mulata took me under his wing. Uh-huh. Lane Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And Jalen took me under his wing a little bit. He was a great leader up front. And I remember watching film with him a few times as a rookie and just being starstruck. And he just made me feel comfortable. I'm telling you, we got a lot of good players there.
Yeah.
So, those guys.
There's a reason why you guys won the Super Bowl. Yeah, there's a reason. Question I had for you is, like, obviously you're a kick returner, slot receiver. You've been doing that for a long time. Are there any, like, players that you've looked up to or like, I want to be like him or, you know, whether they're return guys, obviously we talked about Devin Hester a little bit, but are there any guys that stand out to you and that you want to, that like you idolize or look up to?
Yes, there are. Obviously Darren Sproles, I look up to the Calvin Johnsons of the world, but I don't try and emulate them. So, Julian Edelman was for sure a big one that I really looked up to. Really any undersized receiver growing up. That's why Austin Colley, I mean, he's not really undersized, but he's not huge. He was like my favorite player growing up.
Yeah.
And I've even talked to, you know, some guys who played on that Colts team and they say, oh, Colley could route up anybody. You could put the best corner in the league and he'd route him up, you know? I always looked up to people like that. But I would say Julian Edelman was probably one of my favorite players to watch. And when I really started to try and emulate someone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was always thinking of like about your career and I was like, man, if Tom Brady could get this guy on his team, he'd have been the perfect guy for his he looked like Julian Edelman. I forget the other guy.
Wes Welker. Yeah.
Like that person who could just hide in that route tree and just like get people.
Oh, definitely. It's so funny. This happens all the time in the NFL and I've had it with a lot of my former teammates from college and people that I watched in college. They may not end up making it in the NFL and people kind of just assume it's because they weren't good enough. Once you get to the league, you realize it's not because they weren't good enough.
Yeah.
Mm. It's opportunity. It's injury. Sometimes it is because they're not good enough. It's opportunity. Yeah. It's injury. And then another time, a lot of time is money. Mm. I've seen players outperform starters 5-1, but this starter is being paid yeah. X amount of dollars, and he's an investment, and you look like a fool if you, you know, and so
yeah.
that happens yeah. a lot of times too.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I, the gap between starters and backups in the NFL is, it's not huge. The yeah. gap between, you know, if you're a starter in the NFL, it usually is because you're the best oh, yeah. at your position. If you're a backup in the NFL, I guess it's more that the difference between the second and third strings mm-hmm. isn't very big.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're a starter, it's because you're the best.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
But if, you know, a lot of times the second and third strings, there's just not much gap. So the third strings will end up being cut and people assume it's because they're not good enough. It's like, I've actually seen them be better than the second string players, mm-hmm. but second string players on a guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
So it's dead money if you cut them. So I've seen it happen many times, and that's just in one place.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I... But it is funny playing special teams in the NFL too, because, you know, you look out there on special teams in college and it's kind of, you know, it's usually the second string players out there. Mm-hmm. You look out in special teams in the NFL and it's 9, 10 All-Americans running down at you, you know, who are second strings in the NFL,
yeah.
but they were 3-time first team All-SEC. Like, right. Right. these guys are just... so it's...
I kind of want to just envision myself in your helmet. When you got a ball that's like 300 feet in the air yeah. and you got to come and catch that thing, you got 10 guys humming.
Yeah. towards you.
Right. How do you not like just freeze and just, you got bullets running past yeah. you? That's what it has to feel like.
It does. Right?
Like, how do you even do that?
I think I learned how to compartmentalize punt return. You know, I feel like one thing when I got to college and I talked with other punt returners and stuff, I realized like people don't really watch film as a punt returner. And I'm like, I don't get that. Cause I always watched so much film as a receiver
yeah.
in college and in high school as a quarterback. Like, I just watch so much film and I'm like, why do people not watch punt return film very often? Like, you kind of watch it for the general scheme.
Yeah.
So I, for years, I feel like I've watched more punt return clips, I would bet, than any player in the country by far. I mean, after every game, I watch every punt clip in the entire NFL, every game, my career. And I study it, study punters, study mannerisms. And because of that, I feel like I kind of mastered certain parts of it. You're never going to master kind of the spontaneous things yeah. that happen.
Do you know that?
But bounce. Yeah. And so after a little bit into my rookie year, you know, at first I was kind of scared of stepping on people's toes and, you know, I'm a rookie, I can't say anything. But yeah. but then I realized like I got to do what I did in college, which was I watched so much film and I would show these film clips to guys on my punt return unit and say, hey, when your guy's foot is angled here, he's doing this release every time. When your guy's taps his right hip, he's doing a 1-2 and he's releasing outside and they're switching, you know, like, and so I started to show these film clips to the guys on my unit because they're busy watching defense film, offense
yeah.
film.
Yeah.
And so I kind of took the job of, I'm going to show film clips to these guys. Mm. And then because of that, you know, we ended up leading the league in punt return yards,
nice.
You know, my last year. And I really believe it wasn't strictly because of me. It was because all of my whole unit was on the same page
yes, collectively.
All yeah. the time. Yeah. And so I think that's kind of how I made the team. And so I was going to own that role and be kind of psychotic with how I approached it. Mm-hmm. It's so yeah. meticulous and so detailed.
Absolutely.
I don't even remember what the question was. We're just kind of going off. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's a, oh yeah, I was just talking about punt return because it is hard. These punters in the NFL too, I'll tell you, they're good. Oh, yeah. They put the ball out there for 5 seconds, manipulate the wind. There's about 8 or 9 different types of punts you can hit. Mm-hmm. So especially playing in the Northeast, I'm not in a dome. It's windy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you gotta master your craft, really. And, but yeah, I've kind of compartmentalized it into different segments of, okay, the first 1.5 seconds snap to kick, I'm watching the two most dangerous guys that I've picked out on film. Then from kick to apex, I'm focusing just on the ball flight, trying to get in a 5-yard radius of where it will land. Then I've got one glance down back at whoever the most dangerous threat was in those first 1.5 seconds. And then I got one more glance up to decide if I'm fair catching. So like you kind of just, yeah. and then it sounds kind of a lot, but then as yeah. you do that over and over again. Yeah.
That's just habitual.
Habitual, yeah. Exactly. And people, you know, get so psyched out about you know, catching and doing things. And it's like, I've always found one thing that fixes five other things. So I, that's kind of what I do.
Wow. So just to get with that, like in the mind of a returner, there's been a rule change in the NFL with the kick return that
it's more violent now. Trust me. They tried to make it less violent.
I hate
that. At least with the returner, it's more violent. It's,
you lost like 10 yards, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it?
Yeah. Well, what it is it's basically putting an offensive line out there and having a running back run through a gap. And so the only way as a returner you're going to have a big return is if you go full speed and puncture that gap. But that also comes at a risk. Yeah, exactly. Right. But people are being more creative. I mean, I've always felt like you could literally run offensive line schemes on this now. You could run tackle trap. You could run counter. True. Like you could run these. And teams are starting to be more creative. I think it actually will be pretty fun. But at least it's not like it was back in the day when you had the wedge and the wedge bust. Yeah. Remember, you had a Star Lotulele back there running in front of the returner. So anyways, I'm glad I didn't.
My goodness gracious.
Remember the wedge.
aesthetically, as a fan, I hate seeing it.
I get it.
So I was just wondering what it was like in the minds of those who actually have to go out there and execute it, what that change has been like this last year.
Yeah. I think you have a bigger chance for a big return, but a less chance for a touchdown, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because your guys are always in, you know, you can fold easily. So if you go on this left side, you're folding back. You're going to stop a touchdown, but there's more chances for big returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't like it as much.
Yeah.
Aesthetically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the good old days.
Yeah.
Maybe not the wedge.
No, not the wedge.
But I was one of the guys that would have to run down there and break
the wedge. Yeah. The only wedge I want is a pitching wedge.
Last question for me, at least. Are there any like I can always remember like that one Devin Hester return.
Yeah.
That like I know exactly what to look for. I know who they're playing, all that stuff. Is there one from your experience or like someone in the past, like your favorite kick return?
The iconic Devin Hester return in the Super Bowl. That's a good question. I loved, you know, I think this was maybe because it's the first time that I kind of opened my heart up to Utah was when Reggie Dunn had two kick returns in one game.
That's right.
Remember that? Yeah. Two kick returns in one game. And I remember kind of thinking like, I could do that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of one of the first ones that I remember. And then me personally, in the NFL, it was fun to do. I had a 52-yard return on Christmas Day, which was fun. Awesome. Against the Giants. And in college, I had a punt return against Oregon before halftime. You know, time ran out.
Mm-hmm.
We called timeout to make them punt it with like 5 seconds left.
Mm.
And once again, from film study, knew exactly where they were going to punt it, knew exactly what they were going to try and do. And so just went up that left sideline. That was the loudest I've ever heard any stadium. That was a fun return for sure. But play that I've ever seen. Saquon's backward hurdle this year.
Oh my I was gonna ask you about that, bro.
Really, just watching Saquon in general. I mean,
just walking. He's
his first game, first play of the game against Washington in the playoffs this year. Just, you know, I've never felt like a fan as a player. You know what I mean? And I see grown men running up and down the sidelines screaming, like laughing. That's how we all felt.
I've seen so many different clips of different angles from that play, and you just see all the team members.
You can make your peers act like fans, you know you're pretty dang good.
Right.
You know how good you have to be to make NFL players look bad?
Probably the greatest hurdle of all time. I don't think I'll ever beat it.
Yeah,
I feel bad for the guy who got
hurt. I know, bro. You on every poster, you bro. For the rest of your life.
Forever. Jeez. That will be you.
My gosh. I might just hang that one up. I was out there with Saquon Barkley, man.
I mean, it's like, would you,
I'm immortalized.
Would you tell your grandkids if Michael Jordan dunked on you and you're on a poster?
Yeah,
I would be that grumpy old dude. I would be that grumpy old dude. They don't have any posters of the rest of that game. I gave that team 28. Like, what? They just put one poster where he got me.
Hey. I mean, yeah, when I saw that play, I was just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, that's insane. Yeah. But no, I think this has been an awesome conversation, unless anyone else has any other questions that come up. But Britton, honestly, thank you so much
for being on here, man. Thanks for having me on. This was fun. I wish all podcasts were this fun and just informal and enjoyable.
Yeah, it's the foyer, that. Man. That's the foyer. That's how it is. And then just wanted to ask you if you could just leave us, if you have any last thoughts for our viewers or for those young football players maybe looking up to you, or just any last thoughts you want to share.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think as this is, you know, Brothers in the Foyer, and we've talked a little bit about God, I would just, you know, say to people, I really do think that God is in the details of your life. And I don't think that he always controls the details. I think most of the time he kind of lets things go how they are, but he's there for you. Especially in football, I've never really known if he's involved at all in the game. You know, when you got one guy praying on one side, one guy praying on the other, it's like, what am I gonna, you know, I don't think he's, somebody but I do know that he cares about it. And it's not that he can't, I do think he can have an impact in it. But I think that that's that whole idea of what is God actually blessing me with? And it's that peace, it's that stability in the highs and lows of life. And I think the last thing I would leave everyone with is just that idea of, I think people might look at me, right, and say, oh, you're at the pinnacle, the success and things. But once again, even then, my happiness and where I want my joy in my life to come from is from those private victories.
Yeah.
Right? Joseph Smith had his Sacred Grove experience before he had any other experience. Before he restored the church and did these other amazing things. It was a personal, private, Sacred Grove experience. And I think that the best thing that we can all do and that I'm trying to do and build habits of is having your own little Sacred Grove experience privately to take out with you in the public world.
Yeah.
And that's what gives you the strength to handle the highs and lows. That's what gives you the wisdom and honestly, that's what gives you the spirit. And so that's why I went on a mission too, is that's a private Sacred Grove experience that I pulled with me into the rest of the world. 100%. So thanks for having me on, and shout out to all the undersized kids out here
who are out there fighting every day.
Yeah. grinding. Go marry someone that's taller than you like I did.
There you go.
For the posterity, right? Oh,
yeah. Talk about a different Abrahamic covenant, the posterity of height.
No, man. Britton, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
Yes, man. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, this has been good. Really good.
Shut up.
Yeah. Well, this has been another episode of Fourth Down in Faith. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Also, follow this man on his Instagram and follow him throughout the season this coming year. Thank you again, man. This has been awesome.
It's definitely we'll do it here. Again. We'll do another episode next year.
Oh, for sure.
And then, for your charity too. Is there anything we can make or
no, just that anyone that wants to golf.
Yeah.
Look out for the Covey Classic. Absolutely. Sign up for it and donate some, you know, proceeds go to the charity. So
yes.
Yeah.
Let me see. Brothers on the golf course. We'll see.
Please do.
I'll be out there so bad.
Let's do it, man. So that'd be fun.
Yeah, I'm not, you know.
I'm going to look dope. I'm going to be garbage, though.
Like a Tiger Woods?
You're right. not at all. I'm going to look right. I'm going to do all I can to get the right fit and everything like that and be out there. It's terrible. But I'll enjoy myself.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this has been another episode of Brothers in the Foyer. We'll see y'all on the next one.
Yeah. See ya. Inviting all to come and try.